This is WCBS and WCBS-FM, New York. WCBS time, 1:15.
Are teenage girls more likely to become unwed mothers than they were several decades ago? Many doctors, sociologists, and juvenile judges believe they are. They point out that parents today, unconsciously, have been putting too much pressure on their girls to grow up fast, to be popular and married. As a result, girls are developing much earlier than they used to. By the time they're 12, many of them are wearing lipstick and nail polish. They're going steady about it, and they're blasé about it, because they've been dancing with boys since the fourth grade. Our teenagers are caught in a revolution of morals in which women today have much more freedom than ever before. Unfortunately, when a girl becomes pregnant, it becomes brutally evident that society still rejects girls who get into trouble. The stigma of having a child out of wedlock today is still almost as bad as it was in Victorian days. And when the girl in question is hardly more than a child herself, it's a tragedy. But what of the child an unwed mother will bring into the world? Should the father be made to marry the girl to legitimize the unborn child, or should the girl give her child up for adoption when it's born? We're going to explore these questions with our speak-up guest today, Nassau District Court Judge Beatrice Burstein, Family Court Judge of Nassau County, was against forcing couples into shotgun weddings, which he contends usually turn out to be the worst solution for the unwed mother's problem. Later on, you can join us if you care to by dialing our special speak-up number, 509-6922, and it'll be about 12 minutes before we begin taking our phone calls. Judge, you say that the number of teenage pregnancies has risen in the suburbs. Is this just among low-income families, or does it spread through all social levels?
It spreads through all social levels, and it has risen nationally, not only in the suburban areas. For example, in our...
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you a bulletin from WCBS Radio News. The story, as it is just being handed to me, is datelined Dallas, Texas. It says, according to the United Press, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade today in downtown Dallas. The incident occurred near the county sheriff's office on Main Street, just east of an underpass, leading toward the trademark in Dallas. The initial story says no casualties were reported, but we now have a flash. This is a flash dated Dallas, Texas. President Kennedy has been perhaps seriously wounded, according to this flash from the United Press International. I am now handed a bulletin from the Associated Press, which says that President Kennedy was shot today just as his motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed Mr. Kennedy, according to the Associated Press. She cried, "Oh, no," the motorcade sped on. May I repeat the last bulletin from the Associated Press? President Kennedy was shot today just as his motorcade left downtown Dallas, Texas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed Mr. Kennedy, crying, "Oh, no," while the motorcade sped on. We are now waiting for additional details from WCBS Radio News. The two wire services from which I have been reading are the United Press International and the Associated Press. The flash on United Press International indicates that the president was seriously wounded. The bulletin from the Associated Press tells us that the president was shot today as his motorcade left downtown Dallas. More information now from United Press International. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally of Texas were shot by an assassin's bullets today as they toured downtown Dallas in an open automobile. These are the additional details as they are now coming in to WCBS Radio News from United Press International. Our full staff is prepared now to bring you additional information just as soon as it flows in, and we'll try to stay with you as the details occur. The president's motorcade in downtown Dallas. We now return to our CBS Radio Network for more information.
We interrupt this program for a CBS Radio Net Alert Bulletin.
This is Alan Jackson reporting from CBS News headquarters in New York with a bulletin on an incident which just occurred in Dallas, Texas, where President Kennedy is visiting. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally of Texas were both hit by a would-be assassin's bullets as they toured downtown Dallas in an open automobile a short while ago. That is the latest word that has just come in from Dallas on United Press International. The Associated Press, in its first report, says that President Kennedy was shot just as his motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy, who was riding with him, jumped up and grabbed Mr. Kennedy and cried, "Oh, no." The motorcade sped on. Riding in the same car with the president for this particular motorcade was Governor and Mrs. John B. Connally, the governor of the state of Texas. According to the last report, both the president and the governor were hit by the bullet. And now one more ad has come in. The president, his limp body cradled in the arm of his wife, was rushed to Parkland Hospital. The governor was also taken to Parkland. Clint Hill, a Secret Service agent assigned to Mrs. Kennedy, escorted the president into the hospital, and we are awaiting further word on his condition. We will repeat these details as they have come into us here in our New York news headquarters. A would-be assassin fired at the presidential automobile in Dallas a short while ago, hitting both President Kennedy and Texas Governor John Connally. President Kennedy was cradled in his wife's arms as the car sped off to Parkland Hospital in Dallas. Both the president and Governor Connally have been taken into the hospital for emergency treatment. An Associated Press photographer, James Alkin, said he saw blood on the president's head. He said he heard two shots but thought someone was shooting fireworks until he saw the blood on the president. The photographer, Alkin, said that he saw no one with a gun at the time. These are the details we have so far on this situation. We are awaiting further information that might come in by telephone or via the Press Association wire to our news headquarters here in New York. The president, as you know, was on a 3-day tour of the state of Texas. He flew down yesterday and was preparing to make an appearance and a speech today in Dallas before flying on to the state capital of Austin for an appearance this evening. We will repeat the information we have of now. Both President Kennedy and Texas Governor John Connally have been wounded by an assassin's bullet. We do not know the condition of either man. Both have been taken to Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas. This is the latest we have at our CBS News headquarters in New York. We now resume our regularly scheduled program.
Well, obviously, Judge Burstein, we're not going to continue phone calls in view of that disturbing news. We will continue with our program. Complete news will be available at 2 o'clock when we once again join the CBS Radio Network for the complete news. As the developments break, we will join the network for any further development. Judge Burstein, as a judge who sees individuals, troubled individuals, come into her court, as you have over the years, it would seem to me that there is a moral crisis that we're experiencing as a country. The symptoms are varied. Possibly we've seen one such symptom today. I should mention to our listeners that we are awaiting any further developments from Dallas, Texas. And for those of you who may have tuned in late, President Kennedy and Governor Connally of Texas were both wounded by an assassin's bullet just a short while ago. We do not, as of now, know the condition of our president. We are awaiting further developments. And, of course, at 2 o'clock, we'll join the CBS Radio Network for complete news details on this and the other stories of the day, although there is today only one story.
From the WCBS newsroom, more on the attempted assassination of President Kennedy in Dallas. Mr. Kennedy and Governor Connally of Texas were shot from ambush today. It is not known yet whether either was killed. AP photographer James Alkin said that he saw blood on the president's head. Alkin said that he heard two shots, but he thought someone was shooting fireworks until he saw the blood on the president. Alkin said that he saw no one with a gun. Reporter Jack Bell, AP reporter Jack Bell, asked Kenneth O'Donnell, the presidential assistant, if Kennedy was dead, and O'Donnell gave no answer. Kennedy was reported taken to Parkland Hospital near the Dallas Trademark. Let's switch now to the CBS network for more details.
We interrupt this program for a CBS Radio Net Alert Bulletin.
This is Alan Jackson reporting from CBS News headquarters in New York with more details on the incident which just occurred in Dallas a short while ago, where President Kennedy has been wounded by a would-be assassin. He and Texas Governor Connally were shot from ambush as their motorcade drove through Dallas shortly after the president arrived in the city on the second day of his tour. So far, there's no indication of how seriously either man was injured. Both were lying flat in their car as the automobile sped off to a hospital. Both men have been taken to the Park Lane Hospital in Dallas for treatment. The incident occurred just east of the Triple Underpass facing a park in downtown Dallas. Reporters in the motorcade with the presidential party were about five car lengths behind the chief executive's car at the time. It has been difficult to tell immediately whether the First Lady and Mrs. Connally, who were riding in the same car, might have been injured. They were holding their husbands as the car rushed off to the hospital, and we are still waiting more details on just what went on there. Secret Service agents in a follow-up car quickly unlimbered their automatic rifles. They drew their pistols, but the damage had been done. One of our correspondents on the scene is now in contact with us, so let's switch now to news correspondent Dan Rather in Dallas.
Dallas police have just confirmed that Texas Governor John Connally also was shot at the same time as President Kennedy, as the two men rode in the same car in a motorcade from downtown Dallas toward the Dallas Trademark, where President Kennedy was to have made a speech. Pandemonium broke out at the scene of the shooting as three shots emerged from somewhere in the crowd. The crowd along the route of the motorcade was four and five lines deep. At the time of the shooting, the motorcade was passing at least three buildings, more than three stories. One child, aged seven, told authorities that he saw a man lean out of the fifth floor of one of the buildings and fire the shots. Police and Secret Service agents now have that building surrounded and are going through the building in a systematic search. Still, another witness at the scene said this man was an adult, said he thought he saw a man and a woman crawling along a walkway over the motorcade route, and that this adult said it was possible that that man and woman could have fired the shots. Dallas police say they have no information on the condition of either President Kennedy or Texas Governor John Connally. Several reporters who were in the motorcade said that Mr. Kennedy had blood on his head as he was taken into an ambulance and rushed to Dallas's Parkland Hospital, just a few blocks from the Trademark where he was to have made the speech. This is Dan Rather in Dallas, Texas.
That's the latest from one of our team of correspondents with the presidential party in Dallas. We will be getting additional details from minute to minute as we continue here. The shooting took place at 1:45 Eastern time. That was just about a little over 10 minutes ago. President Kennedy apparently was shot in the head. He fell face down in the back seat of his car, and there was blood on his head. Mrs. Kennedy, riding in the car with him, shouted, "Oh, no," and tried to hold up her husband's head. Riding in the same car were Governor Connally and Mrs. Connally. Governor Connally also was hit. We are not have no information on how seriously either man has been hurt. Connally remained half-seated, but slumped to the left when he was shot. There was blood on his face and forehead. Both the president and the governor were rushed to Parkland Hospital near the Dallas Trademark, where President Kennedy was to have made a speech today. As you know, this was the middle day of his three-day tour of Texas. He spoke in Texas last night. He arrived in Dallas only a short while ago, was to make a speech at the Trademark there in a short while, and then go on to the state capital of Austin for a reception and a fundraising dinner this evening. The shooting took place within minutes after the presidential party arrived in Dallas. There are no details on just how it occurred. Secret Service men and Dallas police, as we have heard from correspondent Rather, have one building surrounded where they think the would-be assassins may have been located. Some of the Secret Service agents thought the gunfire they heard was from an automatic weapon fired to the right rear of the chief executive's car, probably from the grassy knoll to which motorcycle policemen directed their attention as they raced up the slope. And a late word, Texas Congressman Albert Thomas says he has been informed that both President Kennedy and Governor Connally are still alive after having been shot in an assassination attempt. That is the first word we have had to that effect. Congressman Thomas said he has been informed that President Kennedy and Governor Connally are both still alive after the shooting attempt a short while ago. Thomas, standing outside the corridor of the emergency room in which both the President and Connally are under treatment, said he has been told the President is still alive but is in a very critical condition. President Kennedy is in a very critical condition after the attempted assassination in Dallas, Texas, less than a quarter of an hour ago. The security police have the one building surrounded where, according to one report, the assassins may have been planning their ambush. There is one other report that a man and a woman were seen on a grassy knoll overlooking the motorcade route, and that perhaps that was the ambush spot. Details are still scarce. The situation was a turmoil, as would be understandable, immediately after the shooting took place. When the President was taken into the emergency room, a call was sent out immediately for some of the top surgical specialists in Dallas. As we mentioned a moment ago, the President was shot in the head. He fell back in his car, and blood could be seen on his head. And a call was also sent out for a Roman Catholic priest. This is a standard procedure in serious operations of this type, and is not to be taken as indicating the expected fate of the President yet. Our last report was that he and the governor are both still alive in the hospital emergency room after the shooting. The call has gone out for surgical specialists to treat the governor and the president. Congressman Jim Wright of Fort Worth says that both men were seriously wounded in the shooting, but that they are alive. Vice President Lyndon Johnson was in a car behind the president. There is no immediate indication that he was hurt. As a fact, there's no indication at all of what might have happened to Johnson, since only the president's car and its Secret Service follow-up car went to the hospital in the initial drive. So there we have the situation as it exists at the present time. Assassins attempted to shoot and kill the president of the United States and the governor of Texas a short while ago as the presidential motorcade drove through downtown Dallas. Shortly after the presidential party arrived in that city, the president and his wife and the governor and his wife were both riding in the same car, the lead limousine of their motorcade, going to the Dallas Trademark, where the president was to have made a speech, beginning in just a few minutes from now. So this situation has dramatically brought the news that the president is in critical condition, seriously wounded, and so is the governor, but both men are alive and being given treatment in the emergency ward of the Parkland Hospital in Dallas. And we are awaiting further details and further information on the condition of the men and on the possible apprehension of the would-be assassins. We're going to switch to CBS News correspondent Robert Pierpoint at Parkland Hospital in Dallas.
Here is an eyewitness report of approximately what happened. The president's car sped directly to Parkland Memorial Hospital here at speeds up to 60 miles per hour. As the car pulled up, President Kennedy was bent over motionless with blood on his chest. Mrs. Kennedy was hovering over him, but he was lifted out of the car, and reporters noted that he was wheeled into the hospital. That is the last that any reporters have seen of him, as he disappeared on a stretcher motionless into the hospital. the latest information we have only is that human blood has been rushed into the operating rooms. We do not know whether it is for the president or for Governor Connolly, both of whom are reported to be in serious condition. This is Robert Pierpoint at Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas.
Here in New York, the New York Stock Exchanges have closed early for the day because of the shooting of President Kennedy. In Washington, the Senate recessed pending developments as word reached the Capitol there that the president had been shot in Dallas. The House was not in session at the time. Senator Mansfield, the Democratic leader, made the motion to recess at 4 minutes before 2 Eastern Time. Senator Wayne Morris of Oregon said just before the recess, if there ever was an hour when all Americans should pray, this is the hour. Let's go back to Dallas. Here's another report by correspondent Dan Rather.
The Dallas County Sheriff's Office reports it has arrested a 25-year-old suspect, a man suspected of possibly being connected with the shooting of President John Kennedy and Texas Governor John Connolly. Also from the scene of the area where the president and Texas governor were shot shortly after noon, Central Standard Time today, the police continue their search around a five-story building in which four empty cartridges were found on the fifth floor. Another report from the scene of the shooting seems to confirm that one Secret Service agent was killed at the same time President Kennedy and Governor Connolly were shot. This is Dan Rather in Dallas, Texas.
We are gathering details on a tragic story that has occurred in today's American history, where the President of the United States and the Governor of the state of Texas have been shot and seriously wounded, apparently, in an assassination attempt in downtown Dallas. There is an unconfirmed report that Vice President Lyndon Johnson had been wounded slightly. One spectator said he saw Johnson walk into the hospital holding his arm, and a short while ago, Mrs. Johnson was escorted by Secret Service agents into the emergency room where the president is. Police say they do not know whether the vice president was in that room at the time. But now we have this latest report, an unconfirmed one, that the Vice President Johnson was wounded slightly. Let's switch now for news from the nation's capital as we switch to news correspondent Wells Church on Capitol Hill.
Well, of course, Washington was probably hardest hit by this startling news. And oddly enough, by coincidence, the president's brother, Senator Ted Kennedy, was the presiding officer of the Senate when they learned of the shooting. Actually, he was calmly signing his name to a series of group photographs for visitors when an aide came running in with the word from Dallas. Well, most of the senators looked up, of course, obviously angry at the interruption, and the aide ran to Kennedy's chair. The senator threw down his pen, and the pictures scattered all over as he ran for the door. And the same aide ran from senator to senator telling them the news. They'd just been discussing the proposed extension of aid to rural libraries. Minority Leader Dirksen put his hand to his heart. Senator Wayne Morris of Oregon, who had been leading the discussion, well, he walked a few steps and he stopped and he turned, and then he ran straight for a side door. Others in the chamber at the time included Senator Mansfield and Senator Symington of Missouri and Senator Randolph of West Virginia. All gathered at Dirksen's desk for a moment, and then they all fled the chamber. Reporters crashed over each other in a dash for the doors. The usual scattering of tourists, no more than 100 were left. Everyone completely stunned. At the moment, the Senate was in recess on the call of the chair, but Roger Mudd, CBS News correspondent on Capitol Hill, has some later news than that. Roger?
The Senate has just gone back into session at the call of Majority Leader Mansfield, and when I left the floor just a moment ago with the ringing of the bell summoning the senators back, Senator Dirksen said the intention was for the chaplain of the Senate, Frederick Brown Harris, to lead the Senate in a prayer, and then the Senate would go out adjourning to await again the call of the chair. Senator Teddy Kennedy quickly left the presiding officer's chair. His place was taken by Senator Spessard Holland of Florida. The Senate at that moment was in the midst of a quorum call. The quorum call was suspended. Senator Mansfield got unanimous consent on two pending pieces of legislation, and then the House went into recess. Very quickly, Senators came flocking in from the cloakrooms, from their offices, from the restaurant down below. And in the back of the Senate chamber, along the corridor that backs the chamber, are two wire service machines. And that very quickly became the center of activity. As I went through, I noticed that one, Senators Inouye of Hawaii, assigning to the Missouri, and Gore of Tennessee. Over at the other wire machine was Harry Burridge, Bob Bartlett from Alaska, Stephen Young of Ohio, Herman Talmadge of Georgia, Dick Russell of Georgia, Ken Keating of New York. And Dick Russell was reading aloud to the assembled senators the news that kept coming in paragraph by paragraph from Dallas. The Senate official who brought the first word in to Teddy Kennedy was Richard Riddell, who served as a press liaison official for the Senate and summoned senators for reporters as they come in. Most of the members of the Senate, Wells, were almost too shocked to open their mouths. What I heard Albert Gore say was, it's just horrible, that's all I can say. I went and talked to Jim Pearson, young Republican from Kansas. He told me, I feel sick at my stomach.
Many of the senators came rushing here to the Senate radio gallery, expecting to find later news here than they might even on that wire. Senator Curtis, for example, rushed in. Actually, his face was flushed. He was chomping on a cigar. And, of course, we weren't able to tell them any more than you, the audience, have already heard. CBS newsman David Schumacher was in the gallery at the time that Senator Kennedy was told of the difficulty in Dallas. Were there any other impressions you got?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
we had to send him away. We're trying to have Dave. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States is dead. John F. Kennedy has died of the wound received in assassination in Dallas less than an hour ago. We repeat, it has just been announced that President Kennedy is dead. Star-Spangled Banner. President John Kennedy is dead in Dallas, Texas. He was shot by an assassin's bullet less than an hour ago, and now the official word is that he has died from those wounds that he suffered from the assassin's gun as he drove through the streets of Dallas. President Kennedy is dead. Our new president is the Vice President Lyndon Johnson. For a moment, a brief biography on our president from my colleague Dallas Townsend.
Alan, Mr. Kennedy was the youngest president ever elected to office in the United States, and he was the first Roman Catholic president in the history of this country. Mr. Kennedy was born May 29, 1917, in Brookline, Massachusetts. He was the second of nine children born to Joseph P. Kennedy, a financier and ambassador to the court of St. James. During his school years, the president attended the London School of Economics, and he graduated with honors from Harvard University. He later served with the U.S. Navy during the Second World War, and during that war, he commanded a PT boat in the Solomon Islands, and he was awarded the Navy and Marine Corps medals and the Purple Heart. After the war years, Mr. Kennedy briefly became a correspondent for the International News Service, and he covered the Potsdam Conference and the opening of the United Nations in San Francisco. In 1947, Mr. Kennedy entered politics by serving as Democratic representative from Massachusetts from 1947 to 1953. He defeated Henry Cabot Lodge for the Senate in 1952 and was reelected in 1958. It could easily be pointed out right now that Mr. Lodge, whom Mr. Kennedy defeated in 1952, is now serving as ambassador in South Vietnam. Mr. Kennedy came within an eyelash of winning the vice presidential nomination in 1956, losing to Senator Kefauver in the last few minutes of a very exciting ballot. He succeeded in winning the Democratic nomination for president over Lyndon Johnson and Adlai Stevenson in 1960. That was at the Los Angeles Convention in July of 1960. Mr. Kennedy was chosen on the first ballot. During the presidential election in November of 1960, Mr. Kennedy defeated Vice President Richard Nixon for the presidency by a slim majority, only about 113,000 votes. The president's immediate survivors include his wife, Mrs. Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy, whom he married in 1953, their two children, Caroline, born in 1957, and John F. Kennedy, Jr., born in 1960. Mr. Kennedy was the author of Why England Slept, which was published about in 1940, and Profiles of Courage, which was published in the late 1940s and which won him a Pulitzer Prize. Mr. Kennedy was the recipient of a $1 million trust fund established by his father. These are just the sketchy outlines of a career which history will now begin to evaluate. Alan?
Our latest word from Dallas is that Vice President Johnson's wife, after a quick check on conditions in the emergency section, has confirmed that her husband, the vice president, and now the new president of the country, was not harmed in the shooting in Dallas. Mr. Johnson was somewhere in the hospital, but it was impossible to determine his precise whereabouts at once. He was reported badly shocked by the shooting. Doctors are trying to keep him as quiet as possible. He is under heavy Secret Service and police protection. Throughout the Texas trip, when President Kennedy and Vice President Johnson had been in the same motorcade, as an obvious security measure, they have ridden in separate cars. The Johnson car has always been some distance from the Kennedy car, sometimes by as much as 60 yards. We see the reason and the value of this at this point. Today, the president was killed by an assassin's bullet. The vice president, riding in a separate car some distance behind, was unharmed. Here again is Dallas Thompson.
Alan, it might be interesting to recall at this point the savage struggle which Mr. Kennedy and Senator Johnson, they were both senators at that time, fought for the Democratic presidential nomination in Los Angeles in 1960. They went right down to the wire. But at the end, after Senator Kennedy had won the nomination, the vice president offered his full support, and the first move that Mr. Kennedy made after getting the nomination was to ask Senator Lyndon Johnson, then the Senate majority leader, to be his vice presidential candidate. And this is what has happened now.
I recall those days as well as you do, Dallas, out there, and as I understand, it took a good deal of persuasion to get Mr. Johnson to accept the post at that particular moment.
I believe it did. As a matter of fact, Senator Kennedy, after winning the nomination, went around to see Senator Johnson the morning after at his hotel, and they spent a long time in conference together, and finally, as a result of that meeting, Senator Lyndon Johnson decided to leave his post as the majority leader in the Senate and lend his support to the ticket. And ironically, as many observers have pointed out since then, it was the support that Lyndon Johnson gave to the president in 1960 which enabled the president to win Texas by a slim 43,000 votes, the state in which he was killed today.
A late report from Dallas is that two priests who were with the president came out to report that he did die of the bullet wounds. President Kennedy killed by an assassin in Dallas, Texas. There are other little items of history and coincidence that will keep popping up throughout the day and for some time. Senator Lodge, now Ambassador Lodge, whom you mentioned a moment ago, is back in this country from his post in Vietnam and had a date to confer with Mr. Kennedy in Virginia Sunday morning.
I think we might also point out, Alan, that Lyndon Johnson worked very closely with the president throughout the last 3 years. Mr. Kennedy kept him constantly informed. He was a member of the National Security Council. He was the chairman of the National Space Agency and the Space and Aeronautics Administration. And he was fully posted at every turn on the details of administration policy. There has never been any sign of friction at all between President Kennedy and President Johnson. Everything has always indicated that they work together as a smoothly running Democratic team, and perhaps this will now pay off in what has happened. Government sources now have confirmed the report that we gave you, that Alan Jackson gave you a few moments ago. They have confirmed that President Kennedy is indeed dead. That report comes to us from Washington on the Associated Press, and it's the first report that we've had on one of the wire services that the president has died. This means, of course, that Vice President Lyndon Johnson has become the president automatically under American law.
The president and his party had just arrived in Dallas just about an hour ago. The president was on a 3-day trip to Texas, part of it for politics. This was the second day of the trip, and he had flown into Dallas and was due to be speaking at this moment at the Dallas Trade Mart, where he had an important speech which had been released a short time before by the White House and which, in fact, had been quoted and, in fact, published in afternoon newspapers and quoted on afternoon broadcasts. The president who went to Dallas to deliver that speech did not deliver the speech, and he is dead instead. Killed by an assassin, and we have had one report that Dallas police have picked up a 24-year-old suspect as a possible killer.
That report came from Dan Rather in Dallas. The suspect was identified as being 25 years old, and we haven't heard anything more on that for about 15 minutes. The original report was that police had surrounded a five-floor office building in downtown Dallas, and they had found four empty cartridges on the fifth floor of that building. It seems almost certain that the assassin must have used a rifle with a telescopic sight in order to zero in so accurately on the president and Governor Connally. But we don't know who he is. There's no further report on who the suspect is or even the reason. And, of course, speculation on his reasons for killing the president and trying to kill Governor Connally would be idle at this point. We did have one other report that a Secret Service agent had been killed. We don't have the name of the agent so far. We understand now that a casket for the president's body is being brought into Parkland Hospital in Dallas. It all happened very quickly. It all happened inside an hour. The president and Governor Connally riding together with their wives through downtown Dallas. On their way to the Dallas Trade Fair, about four shots rang out. Eyewitnesses mentioned hearing two or three shots. The president slumped forward with blood on his head, blood on his chest. The governor also slumped forward. The governor is not reported seriously injured. Bill Stinson, an assistant to Governor Connally, says he talked to the governor in the hospital operating room, and Connally was shot just below the shoulder blade in the back. And now we're going to switch again to Dallas, this time to Nelson Benton. I'm sorry, we thought we had Nelson Benton on the line, but the communication seemed to have failed at the last moment. Here's a late report. Senator Ralph Yarborough of Texas, who accompanied the president to Texas only yesterday on the presidential plane, was talking with newsmen a few minutes ago and collapsed in sobs as he told of witnessing the slaying of the president. And now we're going to switch to George Herman at the White House in Washington.
Perhaps 1,000 times, a man named Lyndon Baines Johnson, up to now Vice President of the United States, has told friends how his father used to wake him up every morning by whacking him across the soles of the feet and saying, "Wake up, Lyndon, you're an hour late and a dollar short of every boy in town." Now Lyndon Johnson is 55 years old, and he's still inclined to worry whether he's still an hour late and a dollar behind every other boy in politics. Johnson is a big man, but without the easy self-confidence that many big men have. He's a worrier, constantly worrying about his position. Is he doing right? Is he still in the right position, strategically, tactically, politically? It's a symptom of this uncertainty that all the time he was running the United States Senate, a Senate majority leader, with an efficient and iron hand, he kept in his three big offices, three big full-length paintings of himself, mostly opposite his desk, where he could glance up any time and see himself slightly larger than life. Johnson is a conscientious man. He ran the Senate with rigid control, but let everybody have his say. Let everybody argue for his point of view on the floor of the Senate, and seldom, if ever, shut off debate or parliamentary maneuverings without consulting all hands. He ran things in the Senate, but he ran them without riding roughshod over the opposition, except in the usual way, rounding up the votes and beating them decisively in the vote. Lyndon Johnson has often been accused by liberals of being the Southern conservative in President Kennedy's official family. But he came to Washington as a strong New Dealer, so strong a supporter of Franklin D. Roosevelt that the president brought him here in his official yacht, and Johnson and Roosevelt consulted constantly on ways and means of getting Roosevelt's legislation through the Congress. Only more recently has he come to be considered as a conservative, mostly by those liberals who wanted a stronger civil rights bill passed than Johnson thought could pass the Senate. Johnson is the kind of man who sees no sense whatsoever in fighting for a bill when you cannot muster the votes for it. He thinks it's just plain idiocy to make a stand for the record, to make an issue, when you don't have actually the votes that can be counted to put the bill through. And so, for this reason, he has very often been considered as a conservative, more conservative than he actually is. Also, for political reasons, he has sometimes taken a more conservative stand simply by keeping quiet on liberal matters. Lyndon Baines Johnson, 55 years old. He's had one heart attack several years ago. It was discovered by his friend, Senator Clinton Anderson. He took care of himself and was able to actively campaign for the vice presidency in the last election, actively, energetically, perspiring profusely through the heat, but fighting all the way for his man, John Kennedy, to become the president of the United States. Lyndon Baines Johnson, 55 years old, now the next in line, the next in the spotlight. This is George Herman in Washington, returning you now for the latest to Dallas Townsend in New York.
Well, the latest we have here, George, simply is that the president is dead. He died 41 minutes ago at 2 p.m. New York time, 1 p.m. Central Standard Time in Dallas, Texas. Just a few minutes, about half an hour after he had been shot, mortally wounded, by an assassin who must have used a rifle with a telescopic sight to attack both him and Governor Connally. Eyewitnesses say that three, possibly four shots rang out. The president slumped forward in his limousine. The car was rushed to Parkland Hospital, but it was too late. The latest we have from the Associated Press is that Mr. Kennedy lived about an hour. I think it was a bit less than that. Lived about an hour after a sniper cut him down as his limousine left downtown Dallas. And the mantle of the presidency has now automatically fallen on the vice president. Police in Dallas have found a foreign-made rifle. Sheriff's officers are questioning a young man picked up at the scene. This must be the 25-year-old suspect mentioned a few moments ago by correspondent Dan Rather, who is in Dallas. The name of the man has not been made public, nor has the name of the Secret Service officer who apparently was shot and killed at the same time that the fatal attack was made on President Kennedy. Lyndon Johnson, although he has not yet taken the oath of office, is now, at the age of 55 years old, the 37th President of the United States.
Dallas, I think we might emphasize here that the Vice President was not injured in the shooting today. There had been one report earlier that he might have been injured slightly, that he had entered the hospital holding his arm. Vice President Johnson's wife, after a quick check on conditions in the hospital, said that her husband was unharmed. He was not shot. And again, we note that throughout this Texas trip, when the President Kennedy and Vice President Johnson had been in the same motorcade, as an obvious security measure, they have ridden in separate cars. The Johnson car has always been some distance from the Kennedy car, sometimes by as much as 60 yards. Incidentally, to remind our listeners and our stations along the network,
the CBS radio network will program continuously on the story of the death of President John Kennedy and subsequent developments until further notice. We are continuing to get details and more information from Dallas, the scene of the shooting, and reaction is beginning to pour in from all parts of the world. We've already had a cable from some of our overseas correspondents. Dan Shore cabled from Bonn that the new chancellor of West Germany, Erhard, who had been scheduled to fly to Washington Sunday to confer with the president, is automatically canceling his visit, even though he had not at the time received official notification of the president's death.
Alan, one of the many ironies in this situation is that the assassination of President Kennedy occurred at a time when there were rumors, and former Vice President Nixon mentioned them, that the president might decide not to have Vice President Johnson run with him on the ticket in 1964.
And now we're getting more information from the scene of the area, and for that, we're going to switch to the radio network pool at the Dallas Trade Mart.
Not all of those guests, 2,500 of them, who were assembled here to hear the President of the United States make a speech, have yet left. Many of them are still loitering near the speaker's stand. Some of them are still crying at the news that the President has been assassinated. Immediately after the news went across the crowd of some 2,500 like wildfire, tears broke out on many faces of both sexes and of both colors who were present here. A Negro porter leaned his head back against the rostrum, which bore the seal of the President of the United States, pulled out his handkerchief, and wept. An announcement was made to the crowd that the President had been shot, that there would be no luncheon, and most of the crowd at that time left. There was no panic here at the Trade Mart, but there were many tears, and there was a sullen silence for some minute or so after the first news of the assassination of the President. It has now been confirmed at Parkland Hospital in Dallas that the President of the United States is dead. He was shot in the head by a high-powered rifle, apparently, from a window in a building on the western end of downtown Dallas. This occurred during a motorcade which was to bring the President here to the Trade Mart for a speech to 2,500 persons. The President was immediately rushed to Parkland Hospital. Governor John Connally was also taken to Parkland Hospital with gunshot wounds in the back. He is at this time reported in satisfactory condition. Vice President Lyndon Johnson was not injured. He was riding in a separate car. Dallas police are believed to have surrounded the person who is suspected of having made the assassination. However, no arrests have been reported at this time. And the dragnet is out in at least two sections of the city, one of them where the incident occurred and the other in the southwestern part of Dallas in Oak Cliff. The news is now official at Parkland Hospital. President John F. Kennedy is dead, having been assassinated by an unknown person who was shooting a high-powered rifle from a window of a downtown Dallas building during a motorcade. Here at the Trade Mart, at first, most of the 2,500 guests who were gathered to hear the president were not aware of what had happened. The press delegation of some 200 or 300 members of the press from all over the country first rushed to the front of the building when the bulletin was first made known privately and in the corridors, and then rushed back, got their notepads, cameras, and left the building in a hurry. Most of them have gone to Parkland Hospital, where the president has just been reported to have died at about 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. After that, most of the guests in the building still did not know of the incident, and it was nearly half an hour before an announcement was made from the rostrum that an incident had occurred. Then another announcement that the president had been shot. This was followed by two benedictions delivered by ministers here in Dallas. Dr. Luther Holcomb of the Council of Churches delivered one of them and made most of the announcements. Then people left, and the noises you hear now are of the porters and waiters picking up what is left of a luncheon that never occurred in honor of the President of the United States. It is not known just when Lyndon Johnson, the Vice President, will be sworn in as the new President of the United States. It is possible that that swearing-in may occur here in Dallas. Reports reaching Dallas from New York are that the New York Stock Exchange has closed because the traffic became too heavy upon the news that the president had been shot. No further word is known at this time. Stay tuned to the station to which you are now listening for a further report on these developments. This is Travis Lynn at the Trademark.
That was our Pool Network radio feed from the place at which President Kennedy was to have spoken this afternoon and the reason for his trip to Dallas. He had arrived in Dallas only a short time before, and it was just about an hour ago that he was struck down by assassin's bullets as his limousine leading the motorcade drove through the streets of Dallas. The president and Governor Connally were both hit by the bullets of a high-powered rifle fired from a fifth floor of a downtown office building. President Kennedy was killed. Governor Connally was injured, but is not in serious condition. Mrs. Kennedy is still at the hospital. She was not injured. She was not shot in the assassination attempt and in the assassination of her president, her husband. A White House spokesman refused to comment on her condition. Vice President Johnson is under heavy guard and was whisked from the hospital by White House officials. President Kennedy was shot in the right temple. The White House medical officer, Dr. George Berkeley, said it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head. The shooting occurred as the president and his wife, riding with Governor Connally and Mrs. Connally, were riding in the White House bubble-top limousine through a crowd of 250,000 people in downtown Dallas. Ironically, the bubble-top on the limousine was down for the trip through the streets of Dallas. For that reason, there was nothing guarding the president from the bullets that were fired by the assassin with his high-powered telescopic rifle from his ambush position on the fifth floor. The horror of the assassination was mirrored in an eyewitness account by Senator Ralph Yarborough of Texas, who had been riding three cars behind the president. He said, "You could tell something awful and tragic had happened." His voice broke, and with his eyes red-rimmed, Yarborough said, "I could see a Secret Service man in the president's car leaning on the car with his hands in anger, anguish, and despair. I knew then something tragic had happened." Yarborough had counted three rifle shots as the presidential limousine left downtown Dallas through a triple underpass. The shots were fired from above, from one of the buildings, as we have since learned. One witness, a television reporter, Mal Couch, said he saw a gun emerge from an upper story of a warehouse, commanding an unobstructed view of a presidential car. The president was the first president to be assassinated since William McKinley was shot in 1901. It is the first death of a president in office since Franklin Roosevelt succumbed to a cerebral hemorrhage in Warm Springs, Georgia, in April of 1945. And now my colleague, Dallas Townsend, has some further background information on the president's biography.
John Fitzgerald Kennedy has been dead less than an hour ago. And, of course, it will be left to history to assess his achievements as the 35th President of the United States. He began by dedicating himself to two important goals: survival of liberty at home and peace in a world shivering in an uncertain balance of terror. He invited the communist world to join in a new beginning of the quest for peace before what he called the dark powers of destruction unleashed by science engulf all humanity in planned or accidental self-destruction. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. That was perhaps the best-known sentence in Mr. Kennedy's inaugural address, which he delivered in freezing temperatures in Washington on January 20th, 1961. And if there can be any keystone or hallmark of his administration, it can be said that that was the keystone. Mr. Kennedy suggested that both sides explore what problems unite us instead of belaboring the problems that divide us. Let both sides, he said, for the first time, formulate serious and precise proposals for the inspection and control of arms and bring the absolute power to destroy other nations under the absolute control of all nations. And the president in that inaugural address, which those of us who heard it will never forget, appealed to both sides to make use of scientific wonders rather than scientific terrors. In that speech, which he never delivered at the Dallas Trade Fair, and the text of which has been made public, the president lashed out at those who he said confused rhetoric with reality. Mr. Kennedy would have said, and he did say in the advance text of his speech, "In a world of complex and continuing problems, in a world full of frustrations and irritations, America's leadership must be guided by the lights of learning and reason, or else those who confuse rhetoric with reality and the plausible with the possible will gain the ascendancy with their seemingly swift and simple solutions to every world problem." That was just an excerpt from the speech that Mr. Kennedy would have made this afternoon in Dallas and was about to make when he was struck down by an assassin's bullet. Francis Cardinal Spellman of New York, who was in Rome for the Ecumenical Council, has just said that he was shocked and grief-stricken to hear of President Kennedy's death. Cardinal Spellman, of course, is an old friend of the president and his family. Mr. Kennedy, during the years that he was the president, again and again put the communist bloc on notice that he intended no softening of American purpose. "Let every nation know," he said, "whether it wish us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, or oppose any foe in order to assure the survival and success of liberty." Mr. Kennedy said the United States did not dare tempt the adversary nations by allowing itself to be weak. "Only when our arms are sufficient beyond doubt," he said, "can we be certain beyond doubt that they will never be employed." And while he said he knew that neither he nor anyone else of his time would live to see a new world of law that he envisaged, the president suggested that a start be made toward achieving a beachhead of cooperation in the jungles of suspicion. Mr. Kennedy wrote that eloquent inaugural address himself. In it, he said that the American people could bring to the cause of freedom an energy, faith, and devotion which would light the nation and set up a glow that can truly light the world. The president died before the world could really be lighted.